Hello and welcome to Gen Z on Leadership. I'm Gabriel Gary, the host, and today I have on the show Indiana State Senator Rodney Pohl. Senator Pohl represents District 4 in the Indiana General Assembly. Pohl attended Indiana University Bloomington and graduated with a major in political science, music, and psychology. He also got his Juris Doctor from Indiana University, Robert H. McKinney School of Law. He has previously worked as the city attorney for Gary, Indiana, and as a public defender in the Indiana State Public Defender's Office. He is currently 37 and the youngest serving member in the Indiana State Senate. Thank you for being here with me today, Senator Pohl.
Great to be here, Gabe. I've got to update my bio. I'm actually 39 now. I was 37 into the General Assembly. I'll be 40 here shortly. But cool. I'm still on the Senate.
Happy early birthday to you. And being the youngest, it's quite impressive. So I just wanted to just get started. You know, you served in law, you worked in law for a decent amount of time. What initially got you interested? And I know that you were appointed, if I'm correct, but what initially got you interested into serving public office as state senator and leaving law behind?
Well, I'll be honest. I actually wasn't at all interested in serving in the General Assembly. I've worked previously. I knew how the General Assembly, you know, the legislature had worked. I was a legislative intern back in 2006. And back then the numbers were a lot more even. I think there was a 49-51 split in the House. I was working at the House at the time. And even then it seemed like, you know, the way the politics was headed, it was seemingly, just headed in this really negative, in this really negative way. I think at that point it was like the Swift Vote voters, and the kind of the Karl Rove era of politics had really started to come to the forefront of politics. And I had really enjoyed working in law. I really had enjoyed working in public defense. I really enjoyed working and ultimately in municipal law. How I ended up getting into it was my predecessor, somebody who I admired incredibly. My predecessor was Karen Talion. She was a fierce legislator. She understood people like pretty much nobody else that I had seen. She understood her colleagues and their interests and their concerns. And she understood how to kind of build coalitions around that, you know, and as somebody who was in the super minority, she kind of had a knack for that. And a lot of that had to do with how really brilliant she was. She understood how to make bad laws better. She understood how to, you know, make compelling arguments to stop bad laws from happening and how to make compelling arguments from, you know, in order to enact good laws. When she had reached out and said, you know, the fact that you don't want this, that this isn't something that that you were necessarily drawn to. It wasn't like a self-aggrandizing, like, oh, this is something that's going to be good for me type of thing. But that I had the background knowledge that I did. She's like, you know, I've been looking for a long time and you're kind of the person that I've looked to as who I would think would be kind of the perfect person to represent not only just our district, but Northwest Indiana in general. Being somebody who understood what was happening, you know, in Gary and understood what happened, you know, what was happening in East Chicago. And some of these other communities and how really that is all, that's all relative to what happens in my district, which is, you know, Portage, Chesterton, Michigan City, a lot of the beach communities, and so she had basically said, you know, a lot of the committees that she had covered, which were criminal law, local government, at the time, public policy, judiciary. She's like, you know, you're going to fit these roles better than, being a jack of all trades than somebody who was just really good at one thing. And so I had a long time to think about it with me and my wife. And eventually, it's kind of like, well, you know, if we're going to make any change in this state, and if we're going to kind of lead the charge for the next generation, you know, as coming into it as one of the younger ones, you know, it was an opportunity that I saw, you know, maybe hopefully this energizes other younger people to run for office and other people to start to pay attention to what was happening. You know, when you look at that list, or, you know, they've got like those yearbook style photos of all your legislators.
Sure.
They don't really look like the younger generation. And I think that that kind of really you know, desensitizes folks from getting engaged and really understanding what's happening and that they can make a difference. So, you know, ultimately I ended up getting talked into it, and I haven't regretted it at all. I really truly serve and talking to young folks like you, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to point out, I'm going to touch on this later, but I was a page in January, and I was in the Senate chamber, and it was really cool to see, you know, Democrats and Republicans just, you know, give each other handshakes, you know, fist bumps in the Senate chamber. I mean, there's almost no divisiveness, you know, that you could tell. And, you know, what's televised, you wouldn't be able to tell. But when I was there, it truly is a community in there. So I just wanted to talk about, you represent a big district in Indiana. With such a wide base, how are you able to maintain such positive community outreach and relationships with all voters, young, old? Yeah.
It's a 24/7 job. You know, and to be honest, I wish I could do more than what I do actually do. It's there's not enough hours in the day. You've got to make sure that you're there for the important, you know, the things that really truly matter. And on top of that, I mean, it's very different. You know, Portage is very different from Chesterton, which is very different from Michigan City. And, you know, with the background that I had coming from East Chicago, I grew up in East Chicago and, you know, from meager means, didn't really have a whole lot of, you know, my parents didn't have a lot of money. And when we moved out to Chesterton, it was kind of culture shock to me. And so I think I kind of adapted. I had gained these adaptive skills and understanding, you know, that, you know, when you're kind of immersed in different places and different with different people, it's, you know, when you do move around like that. I mean, I think that there's, you know, youth are resilient. They're going to find friends. They're going to find ways to socialize. And it's, I think it's a skill that I was able to pick up at a very young age. So, I mean, kudos to my parents for, you know, making that big leap with this, you know, with me and my brother. But you really do, you have to be able to communicate really well. You have to be able to understand, you know, that what you may view as, you know, as an issue or maybe as a benefit is not going to be viewed that way by, you know, everybody in that community. And so you have to be a great listener. You have to remember, you know, you have to remember that, you know, when people are reaching out to you, you know, it's likely you're probably one of the last people that they thought to reach out to. And so at that point, you know, I have to do everything I possibly can to address those needs, whether that's even, you know, whether that's just making a connection or coming up with legislation myself. So, and that's been really, actually, it's been pretty incredible seeing how that can come together. I mean, there was one person last year who had reached out, a constituent that, you know, it's a constituent actually from a district that's, you know, just to the west of us, but to be able to get a law passed based on, you know, the circumstances that she was facing and kind of really getting my colleagues to understand that, you know, it's when the process works in the way that it really should. That's, you know, it's really encouraging. You know, it keeps those good days start to, you know, really kind of chip away at some of those bad days and the way that those carry on you. So.
Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned earlier, you were, you know, of course, a little apprehensive and you were talking into actually accepting the position. I just want to know how long it took you to acclimate to the position, campaigning, et cetera, everything with being a state senator.
That's a great question. My first year, man, I got in right before session started. So I was immediately drinking from the fire hose. I'm really blessed to have Senator Talian as a mentor. But I also had some, you know, some really great colleagues that worked right alongside of me. Senator Melton, now Mayor Melton of the Gary, Greg Taylor, Dave Nizgotsky from South Bend, J.D. Ford, Tim Lannan, who was since left. Shelley Yoder, Gene Bro. We just had this great team of, you know, of legislators in our caucus that really made sure that, you know, made sure to bring me along in a great way. But the crazy thing was, you know, in a way where I really truly understood everything, and they were more than willing to answer all the questions. But the crazy thing was, my first session, you know, I run in a caucus election, you know, just right before session started. Then when I was in session, I had to run for a primary, a very contested primary that was basically right after session had ended. So while I was learning the job, I had to be running for the job at the same time, which took a lot of coordinated effort from a lot of people that were willing to spend time and money to support me. So, and it was not an easy race. I had some very formidable opponents in the primary election. There was a lot of money that was spent in that. And so trying to do both things at once and also, you know, keeping a day job working with the city of Gary, it was by far the busiest I've ever been in my life. I don't know if I slept the entire time, but I think once you cut your teeth like that, is as with anything, and you know, to anybody that's listening, those hard times, they build character. And when when it feels like everything is just compounding, and it just feels like, you know, for some of your listeners, if you got finals that are going, and once you're done with that, you know, once you've made it out of that, you come out at the other end a lot stronger. And that's all you have to think in your head. And I knew that, like, if I could do this, I could do anything. And that's kind of really been, you know, that mentality that's kind of helped me get through it.
Mm, that's a great mindset to have, especially when campaigning for public office. So I just want to talk about also the fact that, like I mentioned earlier, you were the youngest member when you entered. You're still the youngest member today. What is it? How do you work with the people, like you said, that are older than you from different generations? How do you work with them productively to get things done?
You know, there's three things that I think you have to do. I mean, you kind of have to be a legislative leader, because if you're not coming off as a leader, and if you're not, you know, if you're just kind of somebody that's there, they're, you know, they probably aren't going to be, you know, too, they're not going to be too, you know, too incentivized to work with you, because they just assume you're just asking for a favor. So you have to be prepared. One, you have to know your stuff, and you have to be, you have to be on your game when the questions are asked as to what, you know, what your proposal is and why you're trying to, you know, if you're trying to amend one of their bills, for example, why you're trying to amend it. You have to be open-minded. You have to understand that, you know, there's no is always a possibility. And so you're going to have to try and find a way to compromise. You're going to have to be open-minded and willing to compromise. You have to be a good listener. You always have to be a good listener, because if you're just saying, well, this is what I want, this is what I want, this is why I want it, but you're not listening to maybe some of the concerns that they have, or you're not listening to, you know, maybe some of the concerns that they might not have, but some of their colleagues, because you have to remember, you know, you're working with 50 other people. It's not just you and another person in that room. So you have to be, you know, kind of cognizant of what other people are, what other concerns are as well. But most importantly, you have to be trusted. And that takes a little bit of time to start to build. And the way that you gain that trust is working with people when you don't have to. For example, there's been plenty of times, you know, even in my first session, where I would amend a bill because I would say, hey, you know, there's something that I think you might not have thought of in this, you know, and make a suggestion and say, hey, you know, this, the way that this is actually going to probably play out if this were to be challenged in court or whatever. It's not something that, you know, it's kind of like, hey, I'm helping you work on your bill, even though it's your bill and it's nothing, necessarily substance. The fact that you went out and you helped them make a bill better and you didn't have to, or something that you would suggest to them, and that you're paying attention to what they're doing, what their constituents, you know, how this would affect their constituents, it says a lot. And I mean, it takes a lot of that effort, but that's trust building part of a relationship, and that goes with anything, but definitely in the legislature, if they feel as if, you know, if you have individuals that are, you know, on the same side of the aisle or the other side of the aisle, you know, from a different part of the state, if they feel that they can trust you, you are much more likely, you know, to be able to get some things done that, that are going to be better for everybody else as well. So.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And I just want to talk about also, it's not just the generational differentiator. It's also, I know my beliefs and the state's beliefs, you're in the minority of the Senate. And how do you, with the bipartisan Senate, what do you think is most essential working across the aisle you know, especially in the Senate, with different beliefs that your colleagues have?
I mean, listening and trusting, you know, I think there have been a number of times where, you know, I've had to work on legislation that, whether it's successful or not, when you have somebody that may end up, you know, when they when you need to work with somebody, particularly from like a different part of the state, doing your homework and understanding, you know, maybe potentially, you know, something that I might think, why would we do this? This seems like a terrible idea. If you approach it like that, if you approach it in a way, you know, from the standpoint of, well, I need to stop this because it's a bad idea, without understanding why the person's actually, you know, pushing for this and trying to put yourself into their shoes, you're likely going to run into a brick wall, particularly if you're in the super minority where it's 40 versus 10. I mean, it's 40 Republicans versus 10 Democrats. It takes, you know, it really truly takes the ability to one, you know, make sure that, you know all of your facts and you can present it in a way that's, you know, you're not there to argue, you know, you're not there to argue. You know, I look at like kind of like that, they, you know, what people look at as politics, where people are screaming across the, you know, the chamber floors, as kind of a, that's the last resort. If you, you know, really a lot of the work happens way before then, way before even session starts. You know, when you catch word that, hey, this might be something that's coming down the pipe, you need to start, you need to get involved immediately with that and find out why people are pushing certain legislation and, you know, what you could potentially do to lessen that impact as soon as you possibly can. Because once that ball starts rolling, you know, if you come, you know, if you're there a day late, you're going to be a dollar short. So,
yeah. And just shifting to the campaign side, back to the logistical part of running public office, throughout your, you know, experience working with other people's campaigns and your campaign, what do you think makes a successful political campaign at the state level?
You know, I think, I mean, the easiest thing is, you know, messaging. You know, when if you can get a message out as to why you're running, why, you know, why people should have faith in you, why people should believe it. And it can be done in a concise way that, you know, that is easily digestible to pretty much every, you know, to the voters, you know, that's going to be your absolutely your key. You know, because otherwise, if, you know, you can be a policy wonk and just talk and talk and talk about everything that you want to do, but if people are going to go, I can't even understand what this person's saying. I mean, you know, you have to be able to connect in a concise way. I mean, it really is, you know, it's unfortunate because there are plenty of people that I think would make incredible legislators and incredible, you know, heads of the executive, you know, executive positions like governor and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they may never get that opportunity, you know, because they, you know, one, campaign finance and, you know, trying to put together an actual, you know, how much it would actually cost to run a campaign. But two, a lot of that has to do with your ability to communicate and connect, and some folks just aren't built that way. But ultimately, I mean, if you're looking at, you know, putting together a really good campaign, I mean, having that clear message is going to get you so much farther. That, and, you know, really anymore, I tell folks this all the time. I'm like, get out there, you know, get out there and knock doors, you know, get out there and have conversations with people, because you'd be surprised. You know, people spend so much money on social media and, you know, advertising and all this other stuff. You know, really, at this point, I think, you know, particularly your generation is just completely desensitized to it. I mean, you see so much on social media, and it's just like, you know, it's just it all comes from a place of distrust, too. As soon as somebody sees a specific letter behind your name, you know, and that's not their party, guess what? They don't care what your social media post says, because, you know, really, to them, it's just, you know, they feel as if, well, I can't vote for you because of the letter behind your name. I think ultimately the only way that you want to do that is you have to, you know, you have to get out there and you have to make those conversations. You have to have those conversations yourself, and you'd be surprised how much common ground folks can find as soon as you knock on a door, and they're surprised that there's a politician that's knocking on their door. It just seems like it was kind of like a forgotten art type of thing. But, and it was one thing that I look at, like, Senator Fadi Kodura. I don't know if you've ever heard of Fadi Kodura. I'd highly suggest you talk to Fadi. He is an incredible story. Born on the, I believe, on the West Bank. Born on the West Banks. He moved to Louisiana back in 2005, right before Katrina. Had his first child. Ended up getting just as absolutely devastated, him and his family, by Katrina. Moved around to Texas, then moved to Indianapolis. And, you know, he's the first Muslim ever elected into the Indiana legislature. And he ended up, the way that he won, he beat a Republican incumbent in a district that he probably shouldn't have won. But the way he did it was he knocked, those districts are about 100, our districts are about 135,000 people, not necessarily voters, but he went and he knocked all the doors in his district, all the voters in his district, five times in 2 years leading up to that. It says a lot. I mean, yeah. If, you know, tell you a great story about really, you know, being able to message and do so in a way that you're bringing, you know, the policy to the, you know, to people's door. You know, it just goes to show what that can do. Otherwise, you know, you're likely going to get stuck with incumbents and people that have a ton of money to spend on elections. So,
yeah, that's some serious commitment knocking all those doors for sure. I have a question. So, you know, like you said, you don't want to be a complete, you know, oh, this bill, Bill 135. You don't want to just be a talker. You want to also have that appeal of, you know, charisma. And what percentage would you say is that charisma, especially at the state level? Because I know at lower levels like mayor, it's not as big, you know, like local city council, but at the you know, of course, the highest level of politics, it is. How big do you think that plays a part in state politics?
You know, it's a good question. I mean, I think it probably depends on, you know, what the constituent base is. We're talking here in Indiana, and I think that, you know, that ability to, that charisma and that ability to connect is really important, because, you know, it's, Indiana in certain parts is probably pretty homogenous. A lot of community will look alike, but there's certain parts, like for me, you know, you have to be able to connect first and foremost, because the districts are so, you know, the areas within the district are so different. So, I mean, you know, if you're representing a community that, you know, is, you know, pretty much predominantly, you know, predominantly white, you know, Christian, and, you know, the demographics all line up to be very, very, you know, connecting is probably going to be, you know, that connection is already going to be there if you come from within that. But ultimately, you know, that you're likely going to have more of the inability to kind of get into more policy. Whereas I think in other districts where you're going to have more, you know, the ability to connect, and you're going to have to be able to find that and work towards crafting a message. If, you know, I think the broader the more diverse your district or your constituency gets. So, and at that point, I mean, I would say that that's got to be, your ability to connect has to be at least half of what, you know, what you're putting out. The other half, you better have good ideas and be able to point out what change you'd like to bring and what your policy is going to bring as well. So,
absolutely. Shifting on now, I just want to know, in your 3 year time you've been since 2021, what qualities do you think, have you observed good state politicians, you know, whether it be the governor, lieutenant governor, senators, representatives from both political parties or all affiliations, just good qualities?
Yeah, you know, some of the, it's wild, because I mean, there are a number of people that I've just had the utmost respect for. I view in the highest respect just from the last couple of years and seeing some of the brave things that they've done. You know, I think that, you know, it's to Governor Holcomb, for example, he and I don't see eye to eye on a number of things, but I really, truly appreciate it. Anytime that somebody's willing to take on kind of their own party on an issue, and cast aside, you know, kind of the traditional politics and the, you know, the political lines that are drawn, you got my respect, because it's not an easy thing. I mean, particularly when you are in power, I think that is very, very tough, because, you know, in order to keep power, you've got to make it, you know, you got to kind of keep the status quo and keep people happy. So his handling, I think, of COVID-19 and the pandemic, I was, you know, for better or worse or whatever anybody thinks about it, I was very in awe kind of how, you know, despite having a legislature that was fighting, he stayed the course and said, we're going to listen to the scientists. I'm going to listen to my health department. I'm not going to follow, you know, what the legislature's saying here. And they took it away to the courts for it. And that to me garnered a lot of respect. Senator Sue Glick and Senator Liz Brown, you know, those are two strong Republican women who I've watched them buck their party. I've watched them get up and basically call out things that, you know, some of the stronger members within their party probably would have never done. And, when you see that, you're just in awe. You know, it's just like, wow, I cannot believe you got up and, you know, you fought for what you thought was right. And they know that too. They know how much I respect them. I talk to them all, you know, I actually just invited, we were talking about, you know, that camaraderie. I just invited Senator Sue Glick, who's the chair of the Natural Resources Committee, to come to a bill dedication that we're going to be doing in Beverly Shores at the end of next month. And she's going to come out. She was like, yeah, me and my sister would love to come out. And it's a great bill. It's the Lake Michigan safety bill that I'd gotten passed this last year, the safety equipment bill. And she was a huge supporter of that. And she loved the dunes. And she's always said, you know, we always knew it was very dangerous. So this just makes sense. And so, you know, it's great when you can make those, you know, relationships and those connections. And they fought alongside of me on some really, really bad bills to help defeat them this year. So it just goes to show, you know, those party lines get blurred once you start to build that trust and you start to build, you start building kind of coalitions around like, hey, let's get some good stuff done here. So. Mm-hmm.
So just shifting more towards you and your experience and your development as a senator, what do you have a book or a film or anything that a film as well or podcast, don't say anything about me, but that has influenced you throughout your career, you know?
Oof, throughout my career, that's a good one. I think I've been probably more influenced by people than any particular books or movies or anything. I will say there's a book that I'm that I am really kind of influenced by right now. It's called How Democracies Die. It's by Daniel Ziblatt and Stephen Levitsky, and it's kind of like a hard look at what's kind of happening with our politics right now. And, you know, is our democracy in trouble? And that's something that's just been, when you ask that, that's the first thing that comes to mind right now, as far as books go. I actually got to see Dr. Ziblatt speak last summer, and I was like, yeah, I got to get this book. This is incredible. Cause it talks about other 20th century, you know, democracies that have found themselves in trouble and some of the harbingers that they're starting to notice here in the States. Other than that, man, that's a really, really good question. I have to think back to like when I was younger and think of some of the books that I think probably it's a question I haven't thought about in a really long time.
I know I am putting you on the spot. Do you have a president or like a political figure that you admire from, you know, previously, whether it be 20th century or something like that?
You know, I don't know about, I actually don't even know about necessarily presidents. I think it's more or less more people that were influential to me growing up, and that kind of inspired me to stay on this track. I mean, I did have an uncle that was, that was in the legislature, and I did see how he worked. And it was actually one of the reasons why I didn't want to get in the legislature, because I saw how hard he had to work, and it seemed like a thankless job. But I would say my teachers were probably the most influential. Bob Durance is one of my teachers. He's actually running for the first time right now for county council in Porter County. He's still a teacher at Chesterton High School. And Bob is one of those guys, Mr. Durance is one of those guys that, you know, when I was in high school, I was starting to get myself into some trouble, and he had no clue of this, by the way. I started hanging out the wrong crowd, started doing bad things. And Mr. Durance was such a good teacher that he actually made me care about school in a way that I hadn't since I was a lot younger. And I always got good grades, but I was just, grades started slipping and didn't really care too much. Mm-hmm. And he taught history, he taught US history. So he taught me about a lot of the people that were probably somewhat influential when you realize what some of the feats that they were able to do, FDR and JFK, mm-hmm. Some of these folks that, you know, ended up kind of forming the nation. But it was in the way that he taught, in that he, you know, he took the lesson seriously, but he didn't take himself seriously. So he would dress up, you know, to keep people's attention, and was just really, really compelling as a teacher. And so I probably wouldn't have cared about school. I probably wouldn't have done all that well in high school. And I probably would have gone more into a position that, you know, I wouldn't have put me in law school. I'll say that, you know. So, and I actually, when I did graduate from law school, I invited Mr. Bruns to my law school graduation party, and he came, and he's still a good friend of mine. And so, you know, if you have those good teachers out there that you really truly appreciate, you stay in contact with them, because you'll be shocked to see that, you know, they will love to see you grow. They'll love to see, and they'll be there to support you no matter what, whether it's letter of recommendation, you know, showing up to any events that you need. You know, it's Bob has been incredibly supportive of me, and now, you know, I'm going to be supporting him and on his campaign. So,
mm-hmm. Absolutely. And just to finish up here with our closing question, you know, you were once the 16-year-old kid at Chesterton High School. What would you give to those kids who are in high school right now, young people that aspire to be in public office, specifically in politics, and how they can be good leaders in whatever field they want to enter as well?
You know, if you're truly interested in getting into politics, I think you have to understand your people first. And if, you know, I think a lot of the time, and particularly now, the way that our politics works, you know, you have to understand why people are believing in the things that they do believe in. You know, so you have to get, in order to do that, you have to get involved. You have to be, you know, you have to get yourself involved into, you know, different community groups, into different, you know, to, you know, making sure you're you know, taking on, you know, things that, you know, whether that is getting involved in campaigns, for example, you know, even simply just making phone calls on behalf of different candidates or getting out and knocking doors. Those are really, really important things, because, you know, I think a lot of people don't understand, you know, how important that connection is. But other than that, I would suggest, you know, as you guys go into getting into school, know that, you know, your grades, they matter, yes, but your experiences matter more. I think what a lot of folks don't, you know, really put a lot of stock into until it's too late is, you know, getting into different internships. What you're going to find is that your first job or your first experience is probably the only place where your grades are even going to be, you know, going to actually be viewed as in a somewhat critical way. And even then, they're probably not going to be all as important. I mean, obviously, you have to get your, you want to get as best grades as you possibly can, but it's going to be those, you know, those internships and the connections that you make from them. There's absolutely no way, I don't think I get anywhere near the opportunities I've had if I didn't take, you know, if I didn't do as many internships that I ended up doing. And whether that's, you know, things that I did in law school or things that I did in undergrad, the doors that open up when you actually find yourself in a working position and you find yourself in the real world, those are so much more applicable than seeing like a letter next to your name. So I would highly, highly suggest, you know, it's all about experiences. It really, really is. You never know who you're going to meet, and you're never going to know where you're going to get to be because of it. So make sure that, you know, work hard, but, you know, get out in the real world as much as you possibly can and do those things and take those opportunities. So
thank you. Thank you so much. State Senator Rodney Pohl, District 4, youngest senator in the Indiana General Assembly. Thank you for being on the show. The host. host of Gen Z on Leadership. I want to thank you for tuning into today's episode with State Senator Rodney Pohl, who represents District 4 here in Indiana. If you want to learn more about Senator Pohl, you could check out his website, which is rodney4indiana.com. Again, that is rodney4indiana.com. If you want to support me and my podcast, you can check out all my social medias, which are Gabriel F. Gary at Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. If you want to support the podcast even more, you can also check out my website, which is genzonleadership.com. Again, that is genzonleadership.com. Also, consider leaving a review on whatever listening platform you are currently using. Remember to stay tuned, as always, for all new episodes as we try to post at least one a month.